You're listening to Panel Borders. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. This episode is the first half of a special presentation of the Gay Comics Panel that I chaired at the Bristol International Comics Expo earlier this year, and featured a trio of distinguished guests on the panel, who I'll introduce in a minute, and an audience that included comics creators such as Ollie Smith, famous for Weekend Friends and running the London Underground comic stall in Camden Market, Richie Chandler, who creates terrific mini-comics under the name Tempo Lush, Bevis Musson, who does the comic Dead Queen Detectives, and Coco Wang, expert on Chinese underground comics who produces the web strip China 512 about the Chinese earthquake earlier this year.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to...
We should actually. We need somebody Japanese to tell us how to properly pronounce it. The way we pronounce it.
Hello, my panel. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 2008 Gay Comics Panel.
Yay!
Thank you. Ooh. On the panel, we have Paul Gravett, UK's number one... Gravett. We have Paul...
Just think how
Gravett.
Just think
We have Paul Gravett.
Take two.
UK's number one comics journalist.
Keep going, yes.
Editor of...
That's enough.
Fine. On my left, we have David Shenton, author of the new graphic novel, Get Her! Exclamation Get mark. Her. And the web strip, The Shentons.
Yes.
And Yushan Li, up-and-coming manga and manhua.
Just say manga.
She's up-and-came, really. Okay. She isn't up-and-coming anymore, is she?
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm a manga artist, and I did some yaoi manga titles. Yaoi is gay manga, right? In America, not many original English language, you know, manga that's dedicated to yaoi these days. So yeah, I did several titles in America to start with my manga career.
I mean, I suppose it's yaoi as much as anything that seems to be the forefront of gay comics publishing.
Yeah, yeah, because you see, the thing is, yaoi can reach much more readers than the traditional, when you traditional do gay comic, it's normally gay people read it, right? Straight people think that's strange. But these days, it's actually the normal girls. And as you can see here, they do read it.
Well, yes. Could we have a straw poll of all the girls in the audience who reads yaoi? That's all of them, except Coco's not going to admit. So, I mean, what is it? Could I ask you, the audience, why do you read comics about gays, the girls? Anyone? Because, I mean, I think it's interesting. There's this Bishonen Eye phenomenon
that's
in manga.
It's a softer version, isn't it? Shonen Eye.
Yes, I mean...
I actually prefer reading yaoi manga that has normal-looking men in it rather than the Bishonen sort of pretty boy-style type, because the Bishonen ones always tend to look far too feminine for my senses, because I like the men to look like men. Do you mean muscular, but they still have...
Not muscular.
Not really
normal-looking blokes.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, for years, there's been this stereotype that straight men are into watching lesbian frolics as some kind of, you know, form of entertainment. I don't know if it's some kind of identification issue that they want to be the girl on top. But there hasn't been that much acceptance of, say, you know, gay genre fiction in any media by women until yaoi. It seems to be very much a modern phenomenon. Mm. And when they talk about yaoi audiences, say, in Japan, it is very much associated with female tween-age audiences, you know. Do you think that's because of the lack of representation of decent relationships in manga, or...?
Well, there's some arguments...
The guys only know how to do it.
Well, exactly. I mean, maybe there is that. There's a lack of examples of relationships where the woman is in a more equal footing than man, in that sense, in a lot of so-called straight manga. And I think there's all kinds of things of what are going on in the yaoi manga, but they appeal, I think, because they allow women... You were saying I'm talking rubbish here, but I suspect... From whether you're male or female, it allows you to kind of play, identify with different roles. And of course, we have to say that one of the to my mind, inaccuracies of yaoi, some of yaoi, is it does kind of portray very much the, I forget what the terms are, there's the guy on top and the guy below, basically. There's the guy in charge, and there's usually the much more effeminate one, perhaps the ones that you don't like, but they're all very kind of limp-wristed and
yes,
collapsing at every moment.
Yes, the ones that tend to be big-eyed.
And look, I'm afraid they look like women, don't they? I mean, yeah. if you weren't told, they've got every look exactly like that. And as you probably were realising, a lot of ships don't work on that kind of dynamic.
Mm.
They just don't, and it doesn't fit in a nice kind of neat kind of. Well, he's the one in charge, and he's the one that it's don't you find that it's
well,
a bit more complicated than that?
I mean, I've only read
yeah.
a couple to tell you the truth, because
yeah.
their idea of what gay men are like
mm.
is so generalised and so idealistic. It's absolutely you know, it's just a, if I can say this, fairy story, and I just find it quite. Out of touch with my experience as a gay man, and so it's not really for gay men at all. And I doubt that gay men would read more than one without.
Well,
without
I've read
going
a
to
lot, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, but that's your job.
Well,
you
know, gay
yeah.
men do read romance
yes.
as well. You know, no romance novel is realistic. So.
No,
I quite
yeah.
like yaoi.
I do
yeah.
know a lot of gay men actually who do enjoy and read and draw their own yaoi manga as well as
yeah,
collecting
yeah.
Manga themselves.
It's
they tend to have specific types they like rather than
right.
Like you said, floating manga, sort of pretty boy ones. They tend to go for the genre ones.
I just
there's a big spectrum, isn't there, of
yeah.
material out there, where we only see bits of it. I mean,
I just think that gay
yeah.
men have been through so much over the past 25 years that it's a little bit insulting to have this. In this bland sort of falling in love, I'm this,
yeah,
you're
you
that.
You probably will find the company is Yoyi Press I worked for in
mm.
America.
Mm.
Some titles they have are very interesting because they have this kind of muscular man.
Oh yeah,
they like,
kind of
look
the,
so manly
like Yoyi,
kind
yeah.
of guy, you know, actually. These yoyi stories that
yeah.
you never see in the Japanese ones, so that they found this niche and they actually have this kind of Roman stories with two men. Was it called Wrestler? You know.
Yeah, that was a very good one, wasn't it? But
yeah.
What was it called? It was called now. Pinned or something. Was
yeah,
it pinned.
Yeah.
It's good.
This kind of story.
Do you
yes.
write the stories as well?
No. Really, it's. Normally someone else write it and not necessarily gay. For example, Sean Michael Wilson,
yeah.
he wrote a story. It's actually hentai as well.
Yeah.
Right.
It's quite hard to imagine because he's not gay. No.
No.
Well, we'll get into that. Young lady in the front row has had her hand up for ages.
I was thinking one of the reasons why yaoi manga might have gotten so big is because there wasn't any other way for us to get our gay comic fix at all. It actually was the popularity of yaoi that actually convinced some of the bigger comic people to go ahead and give it a try. Like when Marvel finally went ahead and said, okay, Colossus and Iceman, go at it. And they were the first. I mean, I don't remember.
Yeah,
unless you actually go to a specialty place and get a specialty comic,
mm.
you didn't find it. But with all Japanese manga, they're willing. It's not cartoons. It's real stories. Obviously they're not all real, but it's more willing to take adult situations and put it to art.
Mm.
So there's no problem doing a gay story, and they're not all the same. Some of them are more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the Yuri or the polyamorous ones because there's no room for me in the Yuri.
Who do you like in the Yuri?
Why is there no room for you there?
Oh, because the guys like guys.
Mm. Mm. Okay.
Well. I need to be liked too. No, did you
like Kiriko Nananan's book? Did you see that one? Blue by Kiriko
yes.
Nananan? That's a beautiful one,
yeah,
isn't it? High school
nice.
One. Have you seen that one?
So.
That's one of the very best, I think, of the Yuri.
I can like the stories. I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I have friends who are crazy, and that's one of the only things they'll read. And I'm like, but why? There's other things. And they're like, oh, but they're so great. And I'm like, but. Having a crush on them is useless. They don't
mm.
want me.
Well, I mean, I agree.
Is it possible for a lesbian or a reader to read these yaoi manga and not see them necessarily just as men? I mean, could they
right.
be seen in other ways?
Yeah.
Basically, you could see them as women, both of them.
Yes.
I mean, you know, dominant. And
or people.
Or people.
Draw.
Goodness
Sorry.
Me, people.
Sorry. That's okay. So, in some of the cases, in the way they're drawn, they can be very androgynous. So
mm.
it depends mm.
on
which artist you go for, really. Because
yeah.
of the androgyny
yeah.
of some of the characters, they could be. You could put all your
Absolutely.
Own impression on.
If you didn't, if you weren't told, you would.
Yeah.
You would
especially with what Bishonen is
the atypical, really gorgeous, pretty boys, they do look really remarkably like women sometimes.
Yeah,
so you can get quite confused if you're not being told.
But the thing as well is, it's, there's a difference between, are you reading a romance story for romance, or are you reading a story for the sex? If you're reading it for the sex, then you're going to go for a specific time. But there's no reason to sort of aim that, aren't we? There aren't as many of them. But the way that people seem to be surprised by women reading nowadays misses the point that some of the more extreme ones are about sex, but a lot of them are quite coy about what they share.
Yeah. Lots of tease, isn't it?
Really reading is the romance and the relationship.
Yeah.
And the expectation that you should only like it because they're the same sexual preference as yourself sort of misses the point of what a lot of them are trying to do.
Do you think that making it into a niche, that is, this is a gay comic, would make those kind of comics tend more towards the sex aspect by calling them niche? Surely a gay romance would be more effective in something that wasn't calling itself a gay comic or a straight comic.
There is. I mean, for a long time, certainly in Western comics, the only gay comics, few self-publishings, but pretty much the only gay comics you could get were Thor. There was nothing else. And it's
David Shenton, of course. David Shenton. This came out in 1983, mate. That's my first book.
I mean, that begs the question.
Poor stuff, really. Very gentle, really.
This was probably one of the first gay comics ever.
Certainly in the UK. Absolutely.
In 1980. Well, it's 25 years old now. You can see how yellow the poor old thing's gone, isn't it?
That's the point I was going to make before I get to the question with the man in the hat who had his hand up for a while. We were talking about distribution earlier. When it came to making your comics, where did you find them distributed, and who was sort of publishing them?
Well, this was published by Gay Men's Press, which changed its name to GMP, which seems a bit of a stupid calling Gay Men's Press Gay Men's Press if you're going to call it GMP later, doesn't it? I mean, the whole point of calling it Gay Men's Press is because it says gay men on it, but to call it GMP seems a complete waste of time. So that came out, and they distributed that, and that did ever so well in America. Not really.
Was it an American publisher then of it?
They distributed it.
Oh, brilliant.
And it did very well in America because...
Was it more into plaid?
I'm sorry, I don't even know what you mean.
Well, look, it's not.
I thought maybe it was a gay term. Right. But I mean, one of the crossover books of last year was Fun Home by
Alison Bechdel.
Yeah. And that has appealed to both, like, you know, a straight and a gay audience, and is being stocked in bookstop.
Have you all read Fun Home? Anybody read Fun Home?
Shame on you.
See, this is what
Did
I was saying.
Fun Home was Book of the Year, not Comic Book of the Year. Book of the Year in the Time, in Time magazine.
I mean, basically,
it's incredible. I mean, in other words, all the other ones were kind of boring books without any pictures in. And number one was Fun Home.
It's fantastic.
Any of the stuff that you sort of really mentioned that it was.
It's six feet under the graphic novel. Yeah.
In a way, it is. Yeah. It has got that. Plus, it's autobiographical.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying, I mean, you know, don't pitch it as a lesbian novel necessarily, pitch it as 6 feet under the graphic novel, and people will buy it because that's a popular TV show, you know.
Mm.
I mean, what Ollie was saying...
On the back of that, though, was Alison's Dykes to Watch Out For is going to get reissued and get a real high-profile publishing deal rather than being the more niche publisher.
And I don't think that manga could have... Sorry, they couldn't have done Fun Home as a manga comic because it actually is warts and all. I mean, the lesbian sex in there is lesbian sex.
But it's quite awkward, though, and you know, it's all about that autobiographical
experience.
It's not
idealized. Yes, it's not idealized. It's got its integrity intact, and she doesn't have a very successful sex life, because her father also has boys, and he brings them back to the funeral parlor. I mean, it's really good. But it is her life story, and I think that her father, well, I won't tell what happened to her father, because it'll spoil the story, but since it's come out and become so successful, I read that her family are now upset because she's actually laid them out for people to look at as well.
But I mean, what Ollie was saying about niche audiences, you know, that there's actually a distributor called Yowie Press, and you know, you wrote your comics for Gay Man's Press.
Yes.
I mean, did you approach other publishers saying, I'd like to do something that has, you know, a gay angle? but I'd like it to have a wider audience.
No, Stanley came out because I was in Gay News from 1975,
okay.
And I had a strip, cartoon strip in there every week, and I've had a cartoon strip in one comic or a gay paper or another ever since.
Mm.
And so this was like the culmination of like 2 years of comic strip, but I just turned it into a story.
Mm.
And then after that, I brought out Salome, which was the Oscar Wilde, the whole play of Oscar Wilde,
mm.
which I turned into a comic book, and this was by Quartet.
Okay, so that has crossover appeal.
So this certainly has crossover, mm. and certainly a gay section of this play that I've brought to the fore.
Mm.
So, I mean, and that's Quartet, and that did very well in America too.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Tell us about Get Her.
Oh yeah, Get Her, the new one. Yeah, Get Her. I was in a magazine called Boys Magazine, which is. There's all these gay papers and they're all political. Then Boys came along, and the most serious thing it did was tell you how heavy this glitter ball was or something like that. and I was in this paper because I thought I would do something different from all the politics, you know, what with all the all the strips I did. So I did all this strip, and it was every week. And a couple of years ago, I went through my filing cabinet and found all the drawings still in a big pile. I thought, well, I could probably do something with that. So I just dragged them out, taught myself Photoshop, put them all on, wrote a story, took out all the words because the words were rubbish, and then wrote a story on the drawings that are the drawings I have. So it's kind of coherent.
Mm.
It's a bit, you know. But it is there is a plot, and you can get this on the Knockabout store when you go back.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's like a remix, really, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, Yishan, what's your role at Yowie Press? I mean, is it just as a creator, or do you have an advisory?
Yeah, actually, I personally do some Yowie romance books for them. I did two complete books and several half book stories, and also I have a studio in China, and they normally work on hentai titles.
Yeah. Tentacle porn.
Yeah. So it's more, you know, I'm a married woman, I can't really draw these kind of things, or I feel guilty a bit. And I generally let the studios do the hentai stuff. And and sometimes for the last 2 years in Bristol, I kind of promote Yoi Press a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I kind of sell some books from Yoi Press.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other comics do you find giving them a gay angle at all? Is that something you keep separate? Because you said
but
that
the thing is the rest of the book I do normally are for children.
Oh no, but even so, but I mean, the point I was going to make is, like, I mean, in over the last couple of years, another sort of big issue in comics was, say, North Star becoming gay in the X-Men, and Young Avengers having a couple of teenagers having an awkward gay relationship. So it is an issue that can be kind of addressed in children's comics.
Yeah, actually,
you know.
I just thought of something really interesting, because my, you know, I work in normally these days in Bundesnet in France for this big hardcover books, and there's a story about a teenager girl called QTB. You saw the book.
Yeah.
It's the writer last week just suddenly say, how about we change her best friend into a lesbian?
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe you can try, because this book is aimed to like 9 to 12 years old.
Yeah.
It got to be quite shocking for the parent to see what's in the book.
But it can be done in a very kind of sensitive.
It's just a crush.
It's called Go Crush.
Talking of 9 to 12 year olds, then, in the Times last week, I came across an article about a book called Hero, which is a children's book about a gay superhero.
I think it'll be a bit
and it's younger. And this is it, and I've nearly finished it. And this was in the children's section in Waterstones. And it's actually quite good, but it's kind of like The Incredibles. It's kind of like Heroes on the telly, and it's kind of like Watchmen, where all the superheroes are getting a bit old and podgy, but then this young guy comes along, and he's gay, so he doesn't want to keep his mum's invisible, and his dad is a superhero, so he can't, all that sort of thing.
And what's his power?
It's a bit biblical, actually. He can heal people. But he flies around with another superhero called Typhoid Larry, who can make people ill.
Oh, the combination.
So
In fact, that is just like Heroes.
So it's, yeah, it is. It's just like Heroes. But what I found, speaking as an old bloke, is that it actually tells, and we didn't have this sort of thing when I was a child, it actually tells you how to get porn on, or visit porn sites and how to hide it from your parents.
I could have done with that.
So, young adults.
So, and this was in the book, children's book section in
what is there an age advisory on it or something?
It just says not suitable for younger readers is all it says.
Yeah,
but it's all right. I mean, I've whipped through that sort of since I caught the train this morning.
Well, this guy's mentioned Perry Moore. If you look up his website, he's got a very good thing where he did a manifesto about the terrible treatment of gay characters, particularly in the American mainstream, in Marvel and DC, basically, and how there's just never been a positive, fulfilled gay superhero character. They've all won. I mean, I think Northstar's been killed off several times, as you do, of course. And so he thought it was about time there was one. And apparently, there's going to be a movie of this.
Oh,
and dear old Stan Lee's involved. He's not playing it, don't worry. He's not playing the part. He's kind of engineering the movie of it. So,
hopefully, slightly less hands on way than, say, Stripperella.
Yes.
But
you'll find In the Hand of Women offers, you know, gay get much better treatment.
Mm. Well, maybe that's why the yaoi thing is quite often it's by female creators and it's female audiences.
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking, you know, if yaoi get really spread it and like everyone read it, gay people are gonna have much better treatment in society, because basically, you know, you never have gay people portray yaoi as rude, violent, nothing like that. Everyone's so lovable, so pretty.
Ah, shut up.
And you have really high expectation from people from, you know, like, you have to be pretty. You also have long hair, man.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
Censorship in comics is an entirely different issue that we're taking in another panel. But, I mean, like, that book on the back, it says, you know, not suitable for young readers. Mm. And when you buy yaoi, quite often it has a certificate on the back, like, you know, 15 plus, you know, suitable for younger readers. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of does give at least a flavour of how suitable it is for the audience, that some of it's quite tame and might be, you know, suitable for teenage audiences and so on. Man in the hat, it's about time we got to your question.
I've got a question about, on the internet, there's lots of slashing of characters together. Like, I've seen a horrible thing of Optimus Prime doing terrible, terrible things to Megatron. My childhood experiences. I was wondering how you felt about that, sort of the fan fictions and the fan comics of the gay characters together, or like. Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't that still part of the lack of gay representation? You know, feeling that there's so many sort of male characters and they're not getting on with each other, they always have to have a heterosexual relationship. So it's kind of like imposing that on stories where it doesn't exist.
An awful lot of it is written by women, and often gay women as well. A lot of the slash fiction, the male-male slash fiction, is actually written by gay women. Which seems particularly bizarre, but the slash fiction is predominantly full on porn. Very little that is.
Kirk looked at Spock suggestively and started stroking his ears.
Yeah, some of that stuff really scarred me. When I saw, I was like, oh! Yeah.
I sent it to my dad. There was a music video someone did of Kirk and Spock to Nine Inch Nails.
Closer.
It really. They're pretty much Spock, when it comes about that 8-year mark where he kind of needs it, he rapes Kirk. And it was really well done. And it was hysterical. Because, you know, you watched it.
All in the best possible taste.
They were such good friends. And then all of a sudden they take this classic friendship and then it's a relationship, but it's believable. And you're like, no, wait, I could see that. So I sent it to my dad and he's like, and my dad's cool. Like, my dad, he always supported me and my endeavors. My brothers were in, they joined the Gay Straight Alliance for me because, you know, they're good blokes. And so he wasn't like offended or anything silly like that, but he was just like, that's not nice.
I mean, the argument behind slash is usually that the reason that it's written that way is that a lot of those shows didn't have strong female characters that you could build those types of relationships around. Women was the classic kind of thing.
You had Uhura, wait a minute. You had Uhura and the other very blonde in Star Trek, I mean.
Uhura, the tiny little skirt who sat there and said, yes, Captain Emancipator.
Can I get your message? Exactly. And there was the nurse, wasn't there?
My only role on this ship is to repeat what the computer says. And you will shut up. But that's the whole point, that generally speaking, the female characters weren't developed as much. So. you know, naturally when you're building relationships, you go for the characters that you have lots of background information and
yeah.
you know, identification with.
One thing
so.
That completely disagrees with that, though, is the slash in Harry Potter between Draco and Potter. Because you have got strong female characters in Hermione, isn't it? Who is going to be, like, the most powerful wizard-esque type person, except for Harry, obviously.
And the Buffy stuff.
Yeah, Buffy.
Yeah.
And
Buffy's interesting.
Well,
because
Buffy's interesting
there's
because
oh,
there's
no, we're not going to Buffy.
Female and heterosexual sort of pairings in that, if you look at those types of fandoms where you have that, it's going to develop in different ways because there are strong female characters. But even then, some of the female characters will still be portrayed in very stereotypical ways, occasionally even in where they are more prominent.
I get that fan writing.
In some
ways. Well, we're talking in the actual show itself.
Yeah. I
actually
am a writer of Harry Draco.
Yeah, okay. Ladies, thank you. Dragging this conversation back.
The antagonistic relationship they have in the actual story itself, and it creates confusion that you can tell you when you actually have fiction. And it's more about the way the characters interact rather than the sex.
Dragging the topic back to comics. Ollie Smith, creative, 2006's Comics International Comic of the Year. What would you like to say?
With the existence of this slash fiction and the fact
I said dragging it back to comics,
etc., are all extraordinarily popular. And it seems to me, in my experiences in the comics industry, that the writers and creators of comics are almost, I'm not saying the majority, but a disproportionately more number of homosexuals writing comics than in kind of other media. Why is there a problem with gay representation in comics? Why do people need to have a niche market if the readers are obviously fine with it, because they're buying the stuff they're reading.
It's a very good
question.
And the
creators are writing.
Maybe it's the fear.
Do you think?
Well,
yeah.
I wonder
or
if it's
the publishers, possible. Maybe. I
think
they're protecting their properties, their franchises, and their word is if one of them, you have a lesbian bashful
franchise.
Yeah.
Entirely straight.
Well,
I
wonder if it's entirely down to the fear of the American media, you know, of gay representation.
Yeah, I mean,
that as soon as a gay character appears in a comic, North Star, whatever, it's the core celebre in, you know, in the American tabloids.
Those
you
bastards.
You only need to look at the reaction to Green Lantern, where generally within the comics press, it was fairly okay. Within the gay press, it was sort of kind of a bit.
So is Green Lantern gay? Sorry, it's Green Lantern.
No, Judd Winnick wrote about
it. Oh,
you both wanted it.
In the gay press, it was kind of a bit, we'll see where this goes. But then in the mainstream press, it was some of the stuff that was being published was horrendous.
Really?
And the pressure being put on DC to write him out or kill him off from media groups and pressure groups was incredible, and that's what, 5-6 years ago, it's not long ago.
Yes. Exactly why Perry Moore has done that book, and why he's got that website with everything saying, look, this is all these characters that we had hopes could have been exemplars.
But it's an existing character that's being changed. Had it been an entirely new character, would there have been any?
Yeah, no one's too worried about Batwoman.
You had the new Green Arrow that I think was meant to be the son of the old Green Arrow, who was meant to be dead. And he wasn't dating any women.
They were
building up the courage to go there, and they didn't. They took it down. They had to write negative letters on the letter.
And they killed him.
Green Lantern and Green Arrow could have teamed up.
But also, when they meet these characters that are sort of gay or lesbian, it's often seen as being done in a gimmicky way.
Yeah.
Like the lesbian Batwoman,
She's
a lesbian, guys! You know, and you didn't get that kind of support for the character because it was just the way it was being marketed was clearly very gimmicky and not kind of develop a character, we like the character and then realise
it wasn't
that,
here is Batwoman.
Do you think the problem that the press had with Green Lantern was the fact that it was a high profile title? When something like Manhunter does a similar thing, I'll talk to you, Paul. When Manhunter does a similar thing, and pretend that you have. Manhunter did a similar thing, another DC comic, which
really?
Is a fairly, you know, a relatively obscure
well,
title.
Well, they're all minor, aren't they?
Yeah.
And
you know, it wins awards in the gay press, and there's no trouble with the mainstream media because it's not Green Lantern, it's something that's a more niche title. You know?
So gays have worked up to the sidekick status,
yes.
but not quite the main hero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Manhunter was interesting because they did take an established character. In Obsidian, and you know, there's been speculation for years about is he, isn't he, and various writers have said no, of course he's not. Other ones have said yes, he is. And in Manhunter, it was sort of it's a relatively low profile title,
but he is Green Lantern's son.
Yeah, and they set it up fantastically. And within Manhunter,
the only
it's a very normal relationship. It's nothing out of the ordinary. But then the thing that really caused problems with it was when they relaunched GSM and said that Obsidian was going to be in it, and Alex Ross made the comments along the lines of, no, of course you're not getting.
Really?
Huh. And it kind of, it's one of those ones where it's half...
Even though Alex Ross is the guy who gets lambasted for crotch shots on his covers.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's been sort of, he said, no, I didn't mean it like that. But then when you see the way that Obsidian is written in JSA, I mean, he's barely there at all, but they do have so many characters that it's difficult for them to have more than that. But it's sort of, people don't seem to have noticed because it was done fairly suddenly, and it wasn't done as a gimmick, it wasn't done as, look what we're doing to get boost in sales on the book. It was sort of, it just happened to happen naturally, and whether that's because the writer is gay as well is another matter. But it's, but then you had Phil Jimenez introducing a couple of lesbian Andersons when he wrote Wonder Woman, and that caused a major fuss, and they were two vague and supportive characters.
Isn't it to do with isn't it because that superheroes are part of the American dream? I mean, you're talking about things I mean, I don't really know much about, but I'm surprised that this is causing you so much trouble when you've not read Fun Home, and that got into the book charts right up to number two or something throughout the whole of America, and America's perfectly happy to embrace a book about lesbianism and a father now you're worried about Green Lantern's son. I don't actually understand this.
It's not going to come from Marvel and DC, though. It's not relationships
at 6:45 every week. I mean,
it's not coming from Marvel and DC, and it probably won't.
The comics are so corporate that they have the problems with the world. And you look at the stuff that sort of Paige Braddock is doing, or, you know, Charles B. McNeil, and a lot of her stuff has, you know, really strong gay characters, but because they're not having to satisfy a huge corporate company, they can get away with a lot. And they write, you know, you have these fantastic relationships and fantastic stories. I mean, sort of, you can buy all the Paige in virtually any comic book shop. People don't have an excuse for not buying it, and for any big comic shop, any small shop, should have it there. I've seen Fun Home and I've seen James World in Waterstones, and it's because it's not being done for the corporate market, it's just being done, and people who are reading the comics are going out and buying it and loving it. And I think the problem with the mainstream stuff is it's people aren't reading. Who see it as a problem, they see it as a gay character in something that's a children's medium.
In the second part of the Gay Comics Panel podcast, we're looking at gay and lesbian representation in supposed mainstream graphic novels and in manga, and what the various comic book creators in the room hoped for the future. And that'll be online shortly. In the meantime, check out www.panelborders.com for previous podcasts. Thanks for listening.